When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We're back with another edition of the Waiting for Next Year podcast, brought to you by Evergreen Podcast Network. We're live on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, YouTube. I'm your host, Josh Blaha. Tonight, I'm luckily joined by former Waiting for Next Year contributor and now the OBR X&O extraordinaire, Browns go-to guy for anything Browns, honestly, Jake Burns. Jake, thanks for joining me tonight, and how have you been?
Well, first of all, my pleasure. Some kind words there. I'm just a dude, man. Just a dude who watches a lot of football. I'm good. Thanks for having me, of course, anytime. And I hope you're doing well too, Josh.
You're just a dude that knows a shit ton about Browns and just X's knows that. It's crazy. Just like I'll literally after work on Monday, I'll just like scroll through your timeline just to see the film clips that you bring up. Because I trust anything that you say, I trust. I hope most of the time.
Yeah, I can but leave seriously, everybody astray real quick.
Yeah, but seriously though, when it comes to Brown stuff, especially film and X and O stuff, you're my go-to guy. So anytime I can get you on the podcast, I want to get you on the podcast. So here we are. All right, let's talk Browns. 5 weeks into the season, they're 3-2. Could easily be 5-0 if they knew how to finish off games. I guess first topic, I hate that it has to be the first topic though. Baker Mayfield, the shoulder injury obviously hurt him a little bit. It affected his accuracy for a couple games, but he got the accuracy back Sunday in Los Angeles. I'm not too worried about the way he plays the first 3.5 quarters. But so far in Kansas City and LA, I am worried about how he finishes a game or lack thereof.
Yeah, he's playing about C plus to B minus football. His grades sort of bear the same metric as that number. He is not taking advantage of every opportunity presented to him. I think that there have been several different plays that he has missed down the field to the tune that he could have upwards of 10 touchdown passes right now. It's not been perfect, but he has been good enough to win most of their games with, which, you know, it's a matter of how you want to view quarterback play. If your quarterback play is viewed through the prism of my football team's winning and I look at the box score and it looks right, cool. I mean, that's fine. Football is not consumed the same way by every single person. If you are interested in how Baker is really truly playing snap by snap, if you're interested in how he gets to a different level, how does he get the national respect that nobody seems to ever want to give him? Is there a reason those people think that? And I think the way I do, am I crazy or are they crazy? There's granular stuff to study with quarterback play, believe it or not. It's not all just pick up the numbers and look at them and here it is. There are things to decipher. And with Baker, there have been plays he's left on the field. He's also done a nice job of cutting down turnover-worthy plays, to which any quarterback should get credit, but to the detriment of missing some plays down the field. So, again, he's been C+, B-. He has not hit the level that we all hoped coming off of 2020 that he would hit, and that has led some people to feel uneven about where things sit with him, uneven about the performance of the offense kind of collectively, where they're going, what their ceiling is. Are they a real Super Bowl contender? Because not every team is the Texans or you know, teams that you can carve up to an extent. So, and the Chiefs, too. I mean, the Chiefs' defense is pretty terrible. So, with Baker, it's not, to me, the shoulder's one thing. You know, the shoulder's a thing he's dealing with. He's, if you include yesterday, which it's not now, it's 2 days ago, Sunday's 0-for-5 on throws 20 yards downfield or more. He's now 0-for-his-last-11 on 20-yard downfield throws. So, that's a sign of significant deep downfield accuracy issues that we have not seen before. So if the shoulder's a problem, fine. If there's some uneven feelings about his offensive line in front of him, fine, but he's got to be better. Like, we think there's enough talent when healthy to be a Super Bowl contender on both sides of the ball, but can, when the Browns are backed up, and you referenced it a second ago, Josh, you know, when there's a minute 30 on the clock and no timeouts, or there's a minute left with a couple timeouts against Kansas City, can he move his team down the field and score big touchdowns? So that's the stuff he has to prove, and that's where some of the frustration sets in. I mean, it's a wide, diverse fan base in terms of opinion on the quarterback. There's a faction that will never let you tell him he does anything wrong. There's a faction who will never let you, you know, you tell them that he does anything right. And then there are a lot of what I think are pretty intelligent people right in the middle who understand the nuance with all of it. But it's still early, Josh, man. It's 5 weeks in. We'll see where it goes from here. But there, I think there are quiet rumblings, not only from fans, but those in the organization who need him to be better. They know he has to be better to make things work. You know, there's got to be, it cannot always be, it's not only just the out of structure or out of rhythm throws, right? We're creating, you know, here's a stat for you. In his first year in the NFL, out of rhythm throws, which means you have your three-step drop, you hit the top of your drop, you throw it. You know, those are rhythm plays, right? One step, come off play action, two steps, throw it. That's in rhythm. When you have to break your rhythm, whether the defense breaks your rhythm, the protection breaks down, or the routes are covered and you have to scramble a move. He had 12 big time throws out of rhythm, out of structure, out of that setup in his rookie year alone. He's only had five since 2019. So he's not creating. He's not creating out of the pocket like he used to his rookie year. And you can be okay, Josh, if you're eliminating turnover-worthy throws and you're playing pretty well in rhythm. If you're hitting your drop, the ball's coming out, it's effective in that manner, right? He was really good from week 7 through 17 and into the playoffs doing that, eliminating turnover-worthy plays and making the clean pocket in rhythm throws. Well, this year he's missing some of those throws. He's not creating out of the pocket, and this is where you get into this situation where if Kevin Stefanski doesn't dial it up perfect, it's going to fall apart. It's not going to work out. And the thing that is now worse, and what we're talking and why we're talking about it, is even when Kevin is dialing it up perfect sometimes, he's not hitting those throws, or he's not seeing it the way it needs to be seen. So again, Baker's been fine. He's not this huge reason that they've lost some of these games. They're 3-2. He can continue to get better and better as the year goes on. But for now, you ask the question of how's he playing? He needs to be better, but he's not being terrible. So it's like, you know, but what's your threshold? So you decide as a fan base what you want to tolerate or accept, and then you go from there, you know. So that's probably a big part of where you're at with the quarterback right now. And it's tough, too, to watch two of his classmates, Lamar and Josh Allen, really thriving. That's a part of it, too.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, as you brought up, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, them doing really well, and Baker – now, I wouldn't, like you said, he's not struggling, but he's average. And with how much talent the Browns have, I feel like a game manager type quarterback, like if you want to go back to Ohio State in 2002, 2003 with Craig Krenzel, he was a game manager. He had enough talent around him where they could go out and
win. I equated Josh to this, like he's an artist. So there are quarterbacks who are artists who can create, they can take a blank canvas and they can create something beautiful. Even when maybe the things around them to do it aren't ideal, can create beauty that way. Baker's more of a trace it guy right now. He's a tracing artist. He'll, if somebody lays out the thing they want from him, he can trace it pretty well. That's kind of who he is. Is he ever going to be a guy who is a genius at the position? Not just a genius mentally, but physically. I don't know. And I don't know that he ever will be. We're 3.5 years into this thing, and that's kind of the best metaphor I have for what he is. Now you can win with tracers. You can win with those guys, but you know, it's again what your threshold is, and not just what our threshold is, it's what the Cleveland Browns threshold is. What do they want from that position? Do they view it as we don't want a hard reset the quarterback spot, so we will build and do every single thing imaginable to help him get there, help us get there? Or are they going to say we're not going to sign this guy long term, and we are going to try to play the dice and believe in our process and try to pick a quarterback we think can do some of the things Baker can't? Huge, huge, huge decisions looming there that we don't need to get into right now. But really, that's how I sort of view the whole Baker Mayfield setup right now.
I absolutely love that metaphor. It is like perfectly said. And sometimes for a tracing quarterback, you need them to be an artist, such as the last possession in Kansas City and the last possession in LA this past weekend. And I'm not hating on Baker. I think he's doing just fine, but there's times that he needs to step up and he hasn't yet. But then again, we're 5 games into a 17 game regular season. There's still plenty of season left. Hopefully he adapts to his injured left shoulder, which obviously will not heal 100% in season. It's just not going to happen. But yeah, I wanted to get the Baker topic out of the way because it's something that everyone's talking about, even though the offense just put up 42 points and the Browns still lost. But hey, when it comes to the most important position in football, it's going to happen. The discussion is going to be there no matter what. All right. So besides Baker, you brought up Baker not being able to throw the long ball. I think that's part of the reason why the wide receivers have struggled to find the end zone this year. Also, with Odell coming back from a torn ACL, Jarvis missing time the last 3 weeks. There's just a lot of – the wide receiver room has a lot of talent, but I haven't looked at their stats as like a whole. I know there's some way to find it, but I could not find it before hopping on here. They won – I don't think they have a touchdown this year as a group. And two, they have to be one of the lowest groups – like group of wide receivers as a whole in the NFL in terms of wide receiver yards, correct?
Yeah. Not to rain on that stat. I mean, Rashard Higgins did just catch their first wide receiver touchdown on Sunday. So that
you are correct. I forgot
that helps. I guess yes. Yeah, it's all good. It's not it wasn't a memorable play. So, you know, that's their first, you know, some of it too is quarterback delivering the football. Some of it is opportunities are low. With the Browns, they play, I think that they lead the NFL by double the amount of the second team and 13 personnel. So that automatically means that you're only going to have one wide receiver on the field for a 30, 40% of your total play snaps. Like I'm looking at yesterday's data. I just did all of my charting. Should say yesterday again. It was Sunday. They played 22 snaps from 13 personnel out of 68. So, you know, do the math. It's around the 20% mark or something like that. It's above it. They do. God, that's terrible math. They're near 30% or a little over. Good gracious, I'm an English guy.
You're good.
Yeah. I'm so that automatically like eliminates a lot of opportunities for the wide receiver group. So yeah, it's a mixture of everything. It's a mixture of quarterback missing real chances to deliver downfield to them, or the offensive line being just a bit off to protect him on some of those shot throws. And again, you got to be on the field a lot. A lot of teams run a lot of 11 personnel. I mean, there are like 8 teams who haven't run a single snap of 13 personnel. The Browns have run like 90 this year. I could pull this up for you in 2 seconds. I can
Kevin tell you how Stefanski many... is making up for all the teams that don't do it.
Yeah, that's
crazy
right.
How often he does do it. And I mean, but when you have David Njoku doing what he's been doing, especially on Sunday, you have Austin Hooper being one of the highest paid tight ends in the league. And then you have Harrison Bryant. I mean, who's not going to use 3 tight ends sometimes, and even 2 tight ends are, I mean, I'm fine with them using, and that only brings an extra blocker at times, but it also, if you have David Njoku and Austin Hooper, use two tight ends as much as you want.
They've run 80 snaps of 13 personnel. The second place team, second place team has run 45. So, they do a lot. They've run, here's even a bigger nugget for you. They've run 80 snaps of 13 personnel. They've only run 64 snaps of 12 personnel. So they are either in 11 personnel or 13 personnel. And there's really, you know, some middle ground there with 12, but, and then two, think about it, Josh, if you combine 12 and 13 personnel and you say 64 plus 80, you're getting into well over the 50% number, which eliminates normally in the NFL these days, a wide receiver on the field right there. And then you get even crazier and you wanted to go look at like 21 personnel or 22. So they've run, if you look here, they've run 10 more plays of 22. So that eliminates a wide receiver. If you go 21, is also going to eliminate a wide receiver. They've run 35 plays from, so they're not, their opportunity for wide receiver play is lower than almost anybody in the league as it is. You mix in missing some of those big plays, you can see where, like, in the future here with the big decisions on Jarvis and Odell's contracts, are you really spending your money wisely by having those positions filled by expensive players? That's something you have to ask yourself. So we'll see what they end up going with in the future.
They already showed us that they're going to spend money at tight end with Austin Hooper. But yeah, like you said, it's one of those things where if you're going to use tight ends that often, you might as well put the money in the tight end room and get a good blocking tight end and a good receiving tight end and just, you know, throw in my receiver that can catch the ball and make some plays sometimes. I guess I haven't really thought about that, but yeah, with those stats and 12 personnel and 22 and all that, I mean, just throw in the wide receiver at times and there you have. Although I guess when you throw in a wide receiver, if it's like Anthony Schwartz being a rookie, I'd rather have Jarvis out there. But when it's money that you're talking about and the salary cap that you're talking about, I'd rather have a really good tight end than wide receiver, but
compare it to some other teams. So the Browns have run 11 personnel, 100, and we take that away, 137 times, okay? Let's talk about what the Cardinals have done. Let's find the Cardinals, and I can pull this up for us in just mere seconds.
And the Cardinals have like 8,000 wide receivers.
Yeah, they have four or five good wide receivers. And people think Cleveland has four or five good wide receivers too. So if you filter this down to offense, you filter it down to running backs and tight ends on the field, you can get this answer in a few seconds, and then you're going to see what I'm talking about with opportunity cost. So the Cardinals have run, let's see here, we're live, doing this live. All right, so if I'm looking at the data right, they have run 175, so that's a huge uptick. If you go to, here's even Cincinnati. Cincinnati is huge 11 personnel team. Let's do them real quick. I mean, you can just see why, like Jamar Chase, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins. Now, T. Higgins has been hurt a little bit, so that might have changed some of their thought process here, as we should look at, possession is probably important there. So, you know, you're looking at the offense and not the defense, right? That would always be important. Because then you're looking at how many they've faced. Don't want to do that. Live stream, folks. It's possession, offense. So, okay, so on-field running backs is one. On-field tight ends is one. We can get it right. 218 from Cincinnati. So, you know, you're looking at 90 more opportunities for multiple wide receivers on the field. So there's your difference. That's why they don't get the great production. They have to be perfect, right? They have to be perfect when throwing to these wide receivers sometimes because the route numbers aren't as high. So there you go.
Yeah, so I guess it's that, the usage like you just distressed, and then the injuries too. I mean, Odell, I feel like he's not 100%. And we won't get into the chemistry issue. I don't think there is one. If there is one, there is one. We're not going to get into that. And then Jarvis being out. I think Baker has missed Jarvis. I mean, that's pretty clear. I think the game in LA would have gone much differently if Jarvis is in there for those third and short plays and stuff like that. But I mean, it is what it is. The Browns are 3-2. The offense just put up 42 points. So us complaining about the offense too, I guess, is kind of tough because they literally just put up 42 points and lost.
Again, it's what your expectation is. The NFL is driven by passing. So you watch Justin Herbert throw four touchdowns. You watch him throw for 370. You know, it's great. Like I've been harping as hard as I can about how special the Browns' two running backs are in this offensive line and how we should be appreciating it more. But you want your quarterback to be a large part of it, to know that you can throw on anybody and you're in every single game. And when that doesn't happen to an extent, you know, again, a reminder, the Browns have not been a great yards after catch team. They've not been good in that metric for a year now, but they put up 200 yards after catch in that game. So only 100 yards of Baker's were thrown in the air. 200 came from guys making plays on the football and creating extra yards, which is great. Every quarterback deserves yak yards. Hell, Justin Herbert in the same game had 215 or maybe even 220. So that's all fine and dandy. It's great. You just you have to keep some perspective with this stuff, right? Like you just got to see how it all fits together, and your expectation for offense is what's going to determine your happiness. Like if you get bothered by the fact that they're not scoring touchdowns through the air and they're running for 230 yards, yeah, you're probably like, what's wrong with the Browns offense? Well, they're, you know, you put up 500 yards. So that's not just passing. The NFL's got this frame of mind thing where it's like everything is delivered. The happiness gets delivered to you through how many passing yards your quarterback has. It's not the case, man. If you can run, you can run. And that's like becoming so esoteric these days that it's hard for teams to defend. There is nobody that has shut down Cleveland's running game in a neutral situation, either close 7 points to seven ahead or whatever. Nobody's shutting them down. So but nobody hops on to debate the best running back in the NFL. They want to debate quarterback tiers. That's all they want to talk about. So that's what you get.
Yes, I completely agree. And before we move on to running back studs, I do want to talk about Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. It's worth noting that the Browns became the first team in NFL history to total 500 plus yards, 40 points, and no turnovers and lose. So as much as you want to blame anyone on the offense, it was literally the first time in NFL history. So on to the best running back duo in the NFL, even though some people like Bill Simmons may disagree. Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb. It's awesome to have when either of them are on the field, I have complete trust. I mean, you can say Nick Chubb should sometimes get more carries. It is what it is. I like that they're Stefanski's keeping them fresh. But it's awesome to have two top 10 running backs in the league on the same team. And I mean, watching them be fresh against a tired defense in the fourth quarter, I get so much enjoyment out of that.
Yeah, I'll say is they're really good. You don't need me to sit here and bend your ear about how good they are, because I think you can all see it. They're different, unique in how they approach the position, how they play the position. Just enjoy these dudes, because you'll never see a skilled tandem like this in Cleveland the rest of your life, probably. It's rare to see two guys who are as equally adept at doing this thing and can make it work and unselfish, not demanding things from the franchise and all of that. It's really rare. And that's all I got, Josh. Not a great answer, my friend, but just enjoy it, because when it's gone and you can't run the football anymore and you're mad about it, you're going to think back to, boy, I really missed 27 and 24 and what they were able to do. And I'm just telling you, it's going to hit you in the face someday where you're sitting here getting mad about quarterback play all the time and you're not enjoying the gift that is these two running backs on a football field.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Before we move on to the defensive side of the ball, the offensive line, considered one of the best groups in the NFL, injuries have cost them. Jed, what is your opinion on Jedrick Wills? Do you think, the Browns actually finally sat him out for a full game instead of taking him out there with him at like 70% and him not being able to finish the game. I like that they took him out and let him rest. I think that's huge for the long term, because I feel like as Browns fans, we're not used to thinking long term in the playoffs. Yeah. But this year we should. What are your thoughts on just the offensive line as a whole, the injuries, whether it's Wills? I know Conklin came up limping on Sunday, Hubbard being out for the year, Nick Harris, his injury at. Is the depth and the talent on the offensive line taking a hit due to injuries, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Jed gets rolled up the first quarter of the or second quarter of game one, and it's a high ankle. I mean, I don't even know what kind of ankle it is or whatever, but he's clearly not moving as well as he traditionally moves. Go back and watch his rookie year snaps. That guy gets off the line as well as anybody, and he's not moving well, so he needed a week off. He could probably use 2 or 3 weeks off, to be completely honest with you. You lose Chris Hubbard, who's your swing tackle that you were counting on. You let Kendall Lamb walk because you thought you could get by otherwise. Now it's looking a little tough, right? But you're not expecting to lose Hubbard. The triceps, clearly they thought he could push through it and figure it out, but he couldn't. So they IR him. You don't really have anybody on the practice squad that you love. And James Hudson is a guy you really, really, really want to be patient with, but now you have no choice but to play. Nick Harris is beat up. Yeah, man, like this happens. This happens to depth in the NFL on offensive lines. The Browns are fortunate that none of the guys who really matter, Betonio, Treader, and Wyatt Teller, have had injuries, because like the depth behind them can get hurt if your frontline guys can keep playing, and they've had that fortune so far. But if they lose one of them, or they lose Conklin, or they lose Jed for a real long period of time, the way that the depth behind them is beat up, it's almost like tradable, or go find some street free agents to sign to get some security here, because they are beat to hell
at the positions behind the starting guys. So I don't know, man. I don't know much about them. We're going to have to see who they end up putting up on the roster and rolling with. I think I saw they signed back Alex Taylor today, who's a nice developmental young player. But I don't know, man. James Hudson, it's okay. He's trying. They're going to keep scheming to help. Blake Hance is not a tackle, but he's trying his butt off. Michael Dunn sounds like he's getting healthier, which does help me feel better about something happening to somebody along the interior. He can step into play because I'm very high on Michael Dunn. But, yeah, it's being tested. But the silver lining of what's being tested is that it is not the guys that matter most. So you keep your fingers crossed and you knock on wood that that doesn't come to fruition at any point this year.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, when
healthy, they're good, Josh. They're really freaking good. And I break them down every week, and it's another case where we're spoiled by how good these guys are because you forget what bad offensive line play looks like. I mean, you don't break down the Jags or you don't break down the Broncos or and no offense to some, I could name some team that's playing pretty well along the offensive line, but like
the Steelers.
Sure. The Steelers and the Bengals are very inconsistent up there too. So we get all honed in on our group of dudes here in your team that you care about, and you forget that there are some really, really tough offensive line situations. And when you get into those situations, it's not fun. It's really not fun.
Absolutely. So again, yeah, health is obviously an issue. Hopefully it's not too big of an issue going forward. Let's transition over to the defensive line. Myles Garrett, Jadeveon Clowney, who was missed on Sunday, Tack McKinley, Malik McDowell. I love what they're doing up front with those front four.
Yeah, the brothers Malik or something. I don't know what the nickname is, but those two dudes are playing pretty good. I think Malik Jackson graded pretty poorly, but I still think he plays really good. He's high motor. He's high effort. I think he's pretty good. I think he's good. I think Malik McDowell has alleviated a lot of concerns we had about a second defensive tackle. He continues to get better and better every week, in my opinion. Very tough block. Had a great sack on a twist stunt, a text exchange play there with Miles, where he ended up splitting the guard tackle on the high side, getting into Herbert on the back. He's good. They're good. And Jordan Elliott has been the perfect role player there, playing some snaps the way he has. You know, you mix in Andrew Billings getting a couple snaps here and there, and what I thought was going to be a perceived weakness of the defensive tackle room, I think they've been pretty dang good. And then Miles is Miles and somehow finds a way to reach new levels every year. You hope he can really string together 17 straight because he's got defensive player of the year written all over him if he can. And then when Clowney's played, you know, I know he just missed his first game, which was really weird. He went all week with an elbow label, and then is a knee injury and is why he was scratched. So it's very strange and concerning because he's had knee trouble. So you don't love to hear that. But when he's been playing, he's been so good. I mean, he's just, it doesn't pop on the stat sheet, but that's what we knew about him. He anchors his side of the field. He plays the run game viciously. He pressures the quarterback relentlessly. And maybe he doesn't. It's just a lot of weird luck. Like, he'll be there, but the ball gets out barely, or the quarterback flips it at the last second. Like, he's good though, man. And he's the perfect Robin to what Miles does on the other side. But you got to talk about Tack McKinley too, who's playing his butt off. And I posted a clip of him today with a nasty bull rush. Like, he played 43 snaps, which is obviously a season high for him this past Sunday. But is his motor, his effort, which is what made him so interesting and compelling to Atlanta to select him in the first round, is there. It's live. And he's playing really, really hard. And this is what we were hoping we would see. You know, we went through the scare there. He was clearly dealing with something personal. It's not our business to know what it is. It has never come out. It doesn't need to come out, but he was dealing with something in preseason, and we were afraid of losing him for that reason, because he can be a rotational difference maker, and he has been. He's been playing really good football, and he had, I think, four more pressures Sunday. So, yeah, the defensive line is in a really good spot right now. They really have to shore up the consistency of run lane discipline, rush lane discipline with these mobile quarterbacks that are coming. You got Lamar twice. You got Kyler Murray coming this weekend. You got to really shore that up, because even Joe Burrow can get out and run on you if you don't, because you really don't want to dedicate a spy to those players. So that's an area I'd like to see them get a little better at. But they're playing the run really well. It's tough to be bothered at all by how the defensive line is playing right now.
Yeah, I mean, I love what they're doing, led by Myles Garrett. When Jadavion's healthy, that is a lethal 1-2 punch. From the front four to the back seven, I'm very excited about JOK. I think he's proven a lot already through five games. Denzel Ward, if he can stay healthy. Greg Newsome, same. But I really liked, I know they gave up 47 points. I really like the way that Greedy Williams and AJ Green played for the most part on Sunday, and the with the way they've played all season. And keep in mind, I know it's been talked about millions of times, that defensive pass interference penalty, it should have been offensive pass interference. That was on AJ Green. I just feel like they were thrown into the fire given the injuries, and they've played pretty well for the most part.
Yeah, if, I mean, we could go one by one. The linebacker room, Malcolm Smith has done admirably when tasked with filling in for Anthony Walker. Now, he did not play. He only played three snaps Sunday. I'm not sure what the reasoning was for that. I mean, I know Walk is their guy. I know they like him. I just thought Malcolm Smith deserved a few more snaps, but they clearly wanted to play JOK, who I think got in the mid-60s. He was all over the field. He was on there for a long duration of the game. And JOK is different. Like, he just moves at a tempo that is different from everyone around him. He clicks and closes when he deciphers a scheme. If it's outside the tackle box, that sideline to sideline range you want to talk about, phenomenal. He'll bring some hit. You know, he's not a big dude. Clearly, we knew that, but he will bring some force behind him. And a lot of people were really afraid about how he would handle inside the tackle box linebacker play. Could he handle offensive linemen getting into him and connecting with him and shedding them? Well, he doesn't let them do that. I posted a clip on my Twitter feed today of what he does. He's very jittery, short area quickness to where he'll give a two-step move that defeats an offensive lineman inside the tackle box, but doesn't lose gap integrity at the same time. So he'll be there for his run fit, but he won't let linemen get into his core. You can't block him if you can't touch him. And that's why I thought he could still be successful as a box linebacker. He's playing great. He's got a really nice feel for run. For pass fits, where he's supposed to be, how he's supposed to cover. Nice knack for punching the football out, too. He forced a fumble there on the sideline on Eckler Sunday. So, I said it today. I think he will be among the best at his position in no time, playing great football, grading out extremely well collectively for the season. The Browns' second-best defender, in my opinion, from a consistency standpoint behind Miles. Others in the linebacker room, Sione Takitaki playing a really nice will role. He plays about 15 to 20 snaps a game, played 17 snaps Sunday. Had two or three stop tackles. He'll play the run game physical. You don't want to expose him in pass coverage too often. Still the case. Better than he was years ago as he's matured in the NFL, but a really ideal 4-3 Sam linebacker in base sets when the team plays 2-3 tight ends or a 2 running back set, right, Josh? So I think he's okay for them. In the back half, yeah, Greedy has been Greg Newsome too. When both have played, they've been like, man, these guys look right. Like, this is the Greedy we thought we were going to get when they got him out of LSU 2 years ago. He looks right. He's moving right. He fits the scheme. He's got a great comfort in it. Now, remember, he didn't get to play in this scheme last year. He only played under Steve Wilks. So he's playing a little different scheme, a little different coaching. I think he fits really well right now and has a great feel for things. Two highly graded, over 80 coverage games. Love what I'm seeing from Greedy. Hope the shoulder's good. He was doing a little bit of the hand squeeze stuff you don't want to see from a guy with nerve issues. But I got faith in him. I got faith in Greg Newsome, who's so twitchy and is playing so well when he's been playing. Hopefully the calf can heal. The beautiful part of this is, up until this recent Denzel Ward issue, is that those two could be patient. You know, Greedy was playing so well that Greg could be patient. We'll see if that schedule is now rushed, depending on where Denzel is with the neck. Denzel's been a letdown to me. He's not playing with the anticipation that I think makes him so good. He's been very reactionary instead of anticipatory, and that has caused him to be behind on some throws. I thought he started to bounce back against the Vikings. He made a nice play downfield in that Justin Jefferson fade ball to break that play up late in the fourth quarter. Had some nice jumps on a couple different schemes. I thought he started to show glimpses in the Minnesota game of the Denzel that we all know is there. Now, again, it's week 5, Josh. He's got a neck injury. He only plays 9 snaps. He's hurt again. Is he going to miss another game? And, you know, availability is the best thing a guy can have, and we would be looking at 4 straight years of a guy missing time with injury. And that comes into play when he's demanding top dollar to play corner in the NFL. The data says he's missed 4 or more games every single season in the NFL. Right about 4 is his number. He's missed a quarter of almost every season he's been in the league. We'll see if that doesn't continue, if the neck is fine. But I didn't even see anything that really, like, he was on the field non-contact and then was like poof, he was gone. And I don't know when it happened. Maybe it happened plays before that. I didn't see it. I'm going to try to go back and watch, but he was just gone. So if he can figure it out, you know, you want Denzel on the field. But AJ Green, listen, man, he's continued to make strides. I made note of it in camp. I was impressed with him. He only allowed his first real extensive time. The Minnesota game, he played one snap, and ironically, Minnesota targeted him. He was right in KJ Osborne's hip pocket, thought he was going to make that play, didn't make it, took a heroic catch from Osborne. But again, he was, I think, three catches on nine targets for like 25 yards in this game. He had that was a bogus pass interference call on that fourth and four that I thought he was being held. The NFL's got to say something about that. I think eventually they will in the blown call report. But again, dude, like, everywhere he's supposed to be, according to what I've seen on film, was very good at reading schemes, feeling them out, was in Mike Williams' hip pocket a lot of times. I like him. This is your fourth corner. He can play. He's an NFL dude. Like, he can play. I don't know what his ceiling is, but for now, I'm like, I have no fear of him being in the game if the communication is right. From the back half, John Johnson's been a letdown. And I don't know if it's tied to John not playing the position the Rams had him playing. I don't know if it's learning a new defense. I'm not giving up on John Johnson. It's early as hell. But, like, it's just not the same guy that I watched on film with L.A. And, again, I don't know if it's because he's being asked to defend the deeper portions of the field, like, all game, instead of creeping into the box and doing some of the Swiss Army knife things he's been really good at in his career. I'm not sure. I just know that he's not playing the level of football they want him to play or need him to play, because – it could be any number of reasons. Now, they did give him the green dot this past week to place the trust in him to call the plays. I don't know if that was a reason for I don't know. It's all conjecture, but I feel like John has not been the guy that we had thought he was going to be. Now, there's a ton of games left to play. He can figure it out. It could all work out, but he's not doing the things or making the impact plays. Let me put it that way. He's been fine, but he's not making the impact plays I think we all expected out of him. Ronnie Harrison, tough, because he's been kicked out of one game and then he was hurt in the other game with the mild. So he's really only played three games, and he played really, really poorly Sunday from everything I gather from the communication aspect that was burning them. But I still like Ronnie. He's versatile. He'll play dime backer. He'll creep into the box. He'll sit middle and play that cover three lurk. He can handle those things. I think he's a good enough football player. I don't know what the money will be, and I don't know if Cleveland will be interested in him long-term, but for the versatile safety position, if you can move Ronnie closer to the line of scrimmage, it's probably better for your defense. So take that for what it's worth. They've been bringing on Grant Delpit in dime situations. Dime meaning multiple six defensive backs when they want to move Ronnie down close to the line of scrimmage. Grant's been eased back into things. This is third week. I thought he got exposed a little bit last week or on Sunday here, as all their safeties did, ironically. But Grant is doing the things that I wanted Grant to do. He's moving well. He's tackling well. He made a great play in the Minnesota game, lunging and breaking up that Adam Thielen ball on the sideline, tracing it down, running it in the hip pocket, doing everything you want. I have high hopes for Grant Delpit the rest of the year. I think it's going to work out just fine. I think he's a nice player. They obviously didn't play well Sunday, but for a quarter season check-in, coming off an Achilles rupture to where he's at right now, I think it's only going to get better from here. He's just going to keep getting more comfortable. They can use him versatile. Slot player when they want him to be, can be a deep half safety, can be a single high free safety. Only 23 snaps Sunday. I'm not sure if that's tied into the blown coverage. Maybe Joe Woods was a little bit upset with him. They only played 14 dime snaps anyway, so that means they didn't really prefer to play him over Ronnie Harrison in those two safety sets. We'll see where that goes. Troy Hill, again, up and down. He's been really, really good in some games. The Minnesota game, I thought he was phenomenal. He's tackling really well, which is good for your nickel. You need your nickel to be a really good tackler in space. When you combine the word tackle and nickel, it comes out weird like that. You need him to tackle in space, and he's doing a pretty good job of that. There have been some games where he's covered well. This game Sunday, he did not cover all too well. Gave up two first down completions on key pivotal third and one on a fourth down, a fourth and seven in the third quarter. Cleveland's up 27-13. You needed to stop. He gave up a sail route. It was tough. He got called for a holding in the first quarter on a drive where it would have ended because Herbert threw it away. And I don't know why he was just grabbing the tight end in the middle of the field. It was strange. It was no reason for that. He was in the right position. So again, uneven. He had some really nice stop tackle plays in the game too, but his coverage marks were bad. I think he gave up six of seven catches in his direction for 76 yards. Ronnie Harrison gives up, I think, 80 yards of his own, and he's credited with giving up three touchdowns in that game, which I agree with right now. And Grant Delpit's responsible for 102 yards of his own. So you add all those up, guys, you're looking at 300 yards, close to it. And that's where this game was lost, the communication mishaps in the back half and poor safety play. But it's not the end of the world. You live and you learn. You get better. The guys are good enough to handle what they're being asked to do. Just get on the same page, and things can be okay. But the defense has been uneven. It's been up and down. New personnel, getting things figured out. We've seen some dominant flashes, Josh, and we've seen some flashes like we saw in just the second half. People forget that first half, they held the Chargers to a 165 and 13 points. They were playing well at halftime. And then the floodgates opened, and they couldn't get a stop. They couldn't get off the field. All those fourth down conversions, four fourth down conversions in the second half, couldn't get off the field. Got to figure out a way, man. Got to figure out a way. And it could come from a pressure uptick. I don't know. Herbert was 2 of 7 when the Browns brought five or more players, you know, a true blitz. The Browns truly blitzed 7 times in the game, and Herbert was 2 of 7 for 25 yards on those throws. Obviously was 370 yards and 4 touchdowns when they didn't blitz. So could we see an uptick in blitzing? I don't know. I just think that the Chargers really had them schemed up well in the second half, and the Browns busted a couple plays. And all of a sudden you're reeling and you're trying to defend when you got a lead, and it's just the floodgates open. So I think the defense has been fine. I think they'll continue to be a top half of the team, the top half of the league defense, probably settle in 12-8 range, Josh, like something like that seems right to me. And that's good enough to win really important games in the NFL and really good enough to take into the playoffs and have a chance to win the games that really matter if they're clicking at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, you just summarized that perfectly. I'm very high on this defense, especially at full strength. I mean, yes, they just gave up 47 points. One, that was due to Justin Herbert just being out of his mind at times. Two, injuries. I mean, when A.J. Green and Greedy Williams are your two starting cornerbacks, when if at full strength they're CB3 and CB4, Mike Williams and Keenan Allen are just – they're eventually going to beat you, whether it's their speed, their size – I mean, it is what it is. I'm just very – I think I'm much higher on this defense than some other people. But I think once the new guys get more chemistry with together and they learn the defense better, I think this defense can be very, very good. And, like, I'll take the number 8 defense in the NFL, especially once December starts and you're giving the ball to Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt and getting the defense tired, and then boom. And before we move on, I was going to move on to our last topic, but you brought up the fourth downs. How do you feel about Kevin Stefanski's aggressiveness throwing forward on fourth down this year?
Keep doing it. Trust your players. It's going to work out. It's going to balance out. Even if they took the points on some of those to take field goals, they would have run roughly around 34 points. They have gotten, even with the failures, the touchdowns that they've gathered on some of those have equaled out to roughly 38 points. So, yeah, keep being aggressive. I have no problem with it. I think there will be a regression to the mean on that eventually, and they'll start to scheme up some better plays too. I think defenses have just got lucky with the right call at the right time. The Odell drop is another example of just like, blah, it's open, it's in your hands, you got to catch it. Like, I think that stuff will balance itself out. I'm not going to panic about it. I think Kevin is the right type of aggressive, and we should appreciate that more than question it. I think that gets questioned. I'm not saying you're doing that, Josh, but I just think it gets questioned a little bit too much.
No, I completely agree with you. I love the aggressive play calling, so I completely agree with you on that. All right, last and certainly not least, special teams. It seems as though the Browns finally found their kicker. Chase McLaughlin is perfect from extra point and field goals. So now, obviously, when they find their kicker, now they have punting problems. Jamie Gillen, he had a good rookie year, struggled last year in 2020, and the struggles have carried over to this season. He has 15 punts for an average of 41.8 yards per punt. That is good for 31st out of 32 NFL punters. I think they need to move on from the Scottish Hammer. I love the guy, but if you're competing for one of the top spots in the NFL this year, you can't have a punter that's only punting the ball 41.8 yards per punt. But two, him being the holder for a perfect Chase McLaughlin so far, knock on wood, how does that factor into the Browns' decision to move on from the Scottish Hammer or not?
I guess it's up to Preef for what he considers to be important there. I think you could probably, with the level of athlete, find a lot of different guys to hold for your kicker. I think you could figure that out. I don't know. They're loyal to their guys. They like Jamie. They like his work ethic. but it's not working right now. He's not performing. He's not getting hang time. He's not getting distance, and he's not pinning people deep inside their own territory with well-placed punts either. So you heard Kevin make a point that I think will ring true here. He has to be better. And if he's not better in the coming weeks, there will be consideration to move on from him, because it's just punting. And there are a lot of guys in the world who can do this role, who can step in and punt the ball the way that you're needed to punt it in the NFL. Jamie's way too inconsistent. We all know about the week one meltdown too. That has not added up in our framework of how he's played this year. It's not added positively, I should say, to the framework of how he's played this year. So it's a collateral thing here, potentially, right? Where everything collectively adds up. The drop punt that cost him maybe a big portion of that Kansas City game. Three straight weeks of really terrible field position changes. Like, you know, if you're gonna punt there, Kevin does on 4th and 6 with 3 minutes left, you need to flip the field to the other end. And they ended up catching a line drive punt, returning it down to their own 48. And it doesn't change much of the field at all. So it's a problem. It's on their radar, put it that way, that if he doesn't start playing well, they would consider a move. It's not ideal, like you said, because he does a nice job holding for McLaughlin, and they got a good thing rolling with the kicker right now. But you have to weigh the positives and negatives and say, this isn't worth it. It's not worth it to have a guy holding kicks like this. We'll figure out somebody else. Case Keenum can hold kicks. You'll figure it out. So we'll see where it goes from here. But he is on high alert. And I put it in two frames, Josh. I'm either concerned or I'm panicked about something. I think that's a good way to frame your NFL perceptions. I am panicked about the punter. It's a problem. They've got to figure it out. Otherwise, everything else is rolling. The kickoff team is phenomenal. They're making plays. AJ Green and JOK have been like huge standouts in that phase. And that was a rough phase for the early portions of last year. Otherwise, punt return solid. Felton's been fine. I think their kick return team, when they decide to bring the ball out, has been fine. Anthony Schwartz of late has been running those out, making a couple people miss and getting some nice returns. Collectively across the board, special teams had their highest grade other than the punter from Pro Football Focus this past weekend. They continue to get better. I like where they're at special teams wise, but they got to find a guy who can punt the ball downfield and change the field. And it doesn't matter until it matters. And when it doesn't work out the way, you know, the way you need it to work out, it's like, well, hell, why'd we punt anyway? And you can't be asking yourself that when the decision to punt in and of itself is more challenging than it's ever been, Josh. You can't, you know, there's a lot of forward thinking minds about fourth downs and how to handle it. And that's great. I think that's where the game is going. Hell, in 10 years, we could be talking about a game that doesn't even involve kickers. It really could, the way it's moving right now. But for now, when the decision is grueling, do I want to punt here? You know, we've come a long way since the trestle ball 2000s, right? Like, if the decision is, do I even want to punt here? I do. And then your punter can't handle the basic thing he needs to do effectively. Then it's like, man, what are we doing? You know, so we'll see how it shakes out. But yeah, you, I would imagine inside Berea, they're panicking a little bit about what they've seen from their punter. And it's got to get better, and it's got to get better hastily. It cannot be a lingering thing, or we'll see that. Pay attention, you know, if you want to really know if it's coming, pay attention to the tryouts. Teams having, you know, those tryouts always get announced every week. If they're bringing in punters to punt, then your days are limited, my friend.
Yes. I mean, punter is one of those positions where if your name's being said a lot, that's not a good thing. Like, I couldn't name 28 out of the 32 punters in the NFL, probably. Jamie Gillen's name is being said a lot, which is obviously a problem. But hey, like you said, the special teams outside of punter, you couldn't ask for much more than how they're playing, whether it's kicker, whether it's kickoff returns or special teams coverage on both punting and kicking. So that's it of the rundown. Over Browns are 3-2. What are any overall last thoughts on how the season's gone 5 games in?
No, I mean, I thought that they could be 3-2. I thought that was a logical outcome. It was a tough road trip. Going East Coast to West Coast is never easy. And that's a pretty good Chargers team. Not great, but good. And, you know, it's a tough thing to ask, but they had every chance to win it, multiple times chance to win it, and it didn't shake out. Whatever. You got the Cardinals coming in. The good thing is you got 3 home games in a row, and you only go to Cincinnati after that, so you don't have any far travel for the next month. You can play the Cardinals tough, then you get a Broncos team that is extremely uneven on a primetime stage, and then you get Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. Everything you want's in front of you still, man. 3-2, a couple of those two losses are games that, man, you scratch your head, they could have won, they could be 5-0, but You're 3-2. Accept the fact. Don't let the Chargers beat you twice. Don't let it linger into this week. Get it done. You move on from it, bury it, and go win a winnable game. I know the Cardinals are undefeated, but they're ripe to be picked off here. And I think they'll have a nice crowd at home to make it happen. It's really 4 o'clock, still a primetime slot. It's a big game. The NFL is going to be watching it closely. There'll be a lot of eyeballs. Hopefully First Energy Stadium brings it and makes it a raucous environment. And you get to 4-2, you can get to 5-2, and then you play two home game with the Steelers, who are not very good. And then you go to Cincinnati and lay the chips down. You got every chance to be 7-2 4 weeks from now. So, you know, take care of it, man.
Yeah. I also had the Browns 3-2. I guess it's kind of nice to say that they could be 5-0. It stinks too, because they could be 5-0 and a 3-2, but it also shows you the big picture where this Browns team could really be 5-0 if they could finish the game. So it goes both ways there. But Jake, 50 minutes in, we weren't planning on 50 minutes, but I appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we'll talk to you in about 4 or 5 weeks when the Browns are 9 to 10 games in the season.
All right, man. I'll be here anytime, brother. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, guys.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.